Both Yaakov and Yosef take an active role in securing their interment in Eretz Yisrael in last week's parsha, which implies that it is appropriate to plan for the concluding stages of life and securing a proper burial place while a person is still alive, and perhaps is already included in the statement of the Mishnah Maseches Avos, which instructs us that a person should always keep in mind three things, which include Me'ayin Basa Ula'an Atahele, from where a person has come and to where he is going. Of course, also Rifnei Mi Os Ata Osaditein Din Rechesbon, who will have to give a final, before whom we will have to give a final accounting. But included in that is La'an Atahele, where a person is going. And therefore, it's appropriate perhaps for a person to consider where ultimately he will be buried and to secure a burial place while he is still alive. In fact, the Shultei Giborim and Masechta Sanhedrin, of course, Memedrish, that the minig was always to purchase a burial plot while a person is still alive. There are those who quote from different Sfarim that this is a skula for Arichos Yamin, for a person who will live a long life. I think perhaps we could suggest not only on a mystical basis, but perhaps on a rational basis, because the more a person recognizes that this world is a corridor into the world to come, he will live a more meaningful existence. He recognizes he will not live forever, and therefore perhaps takes better care of himself, both physically and spiritually. It is true, and the Chasam Sofer writes this in his Shuvas, that of course Avraham Avinu didn't purchase a burial plot for Sarah Imenu until after she passed away, which perhaps implies that a person doesn't necessarily have to take care of this while they're still alive, only after the situation arises. But at the same time, we certainly know that Avraham Avinu already considered where he was going to bury Sarah far earlier than Parshas Chayesara after the death of Sarah Imenu. The Torah tells us at the beginning of Parshas Vayera that when Avraham Avinu was taking care of his three guests, Avraham Avinu had to run after one of the animals that had escaped. El Habakar Ratz Avram. And he ran after this calf to retrieve it. But where did he find the calf? The Medrash tells us he found him in Maris HaMachpelah. And at that point, Avraham Avinu, upon discovering Maris HaMachpelah, had concluded that that is where he ultimately intended to be buried, and that is where intended to bury Sarah Imenu. The Baal HaTurim actually writes, Ve'el HaBakar Ratz Avram, Avraham Avinu ran after the calf. Bakar is spelled Beis Kuf Reish, which is the same letters as the word Kever. Because at that point, Avraham Avinu had decided that that is where he was going to bury Sarah Imenu. And Rashi, of course, also writes in Parshas V'zayis HaBracha that the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu was already decided upon during the Sheshes Yimei Breishis. And he claims that this is one of those items that was created during twilight, during the Bein Hashmashos, at the conclusion of the Sheshes Yimei Breishis, implying, of course, that the Kvura, or the Makam of Kvura for Moshe Rabbeinu, was something that was already decided well in advance of the Patira of Moshe Rabbeinu. So whether or not one has to purchase, a burial plot or not, based on the precedent of Avraham Avinu, notwithstanding, it certainly is something that a person should consider. Many, of course, do have the custom of arranging proper burial places for themselves, even while they're still alive. Some claim this, of course, is a skula for Arichos Yamin. But given the long-term considerations that one is supposed to have in this area, if one will think along those lines, one will come to the inevitable conclusion that if there are so many Jews who need to secure burial places, and we do have limited space in existing cemeteries, and we know, given regulations both here and in Eretz Israel, and of course the rising real estate costs, that it's difficult to establish new cemeteries. So then you don't have to be that shrewd to realize that we're going to run into a cemetery a crunch or a grave crisis at some point in the near or not so distant future, where there will be a shortage of burial spots to which we can, bury Jewish Mason. The point, this is not a uniquely Jewish issue per se. It's something that confronts the entire world. It's confronting, the United States is a relatively young country, but in other parts of the world, this has been an issue for hundreds of years already. And there are many countries that have already run out of burial plots and already confronting this kind of crisis. In the UK, it's a bigger issue. Throughout Europe, this has been going on for a long time. In Hong Kong, it's a particularly acute issue. If you've ever visited Paris, perhaps, and you've seen or heard about the catacombs that are underneath Paris, which are full of bones from the communities and the societies that live there. And the reason why they established the Paris catacombs is because the bones were flowing into other adjacent homes. So obviously, this is an issue that could will confront larger society, not only the Jewish communities in Chutz La'aretz and in Eretz Yisrael, but it is particularly acute to the Jewish community because of the significance that we give to a proper burial, and of course because we don't avail ourselves of cremation and other forms of disposing the body. So for Jews, it has a particular significance, and because we're somewhat limited, you know, nowadays that many people would like to bury themselves in Eretz Yisrael, and the space in Eretz Yisrael and existing cemeteries is somewhat limited, and people do have a preference to be buried in Yerushalayim. We're not going to debate why that is at this point, not our topic today, but since people do have a preference to be buried in Yerushalayim or in its you know, close suburbs, so then of course that even, you know, raises the intensity of the issue in those surrounding areas. So what can be done to kind of alleviate this crisis? So as a result of this looming issue, there are those who have taken steps to come up with new or perhaps reviving old solutions. One of them, and I gave you a diagram of it, you might have seen it on the highway if you've ever passed it, but at the edge of Har Menuchos, they are, and it's not only in Har Menuchos, it's in other Israeli cemeteries too, a building, I hate to give this kind of description, it's crude, but of like an outdoor parking garage of type structure, where it's a multi-leveled cement structure. On these different levels, of course, they're putting dirt, and burying the mason on these multiple layers of cement. On top of the cement, there's dirt. Even in the columns, as we'll discuss in a few moments, there's dirt that runs down to connect to the dirt in the ground. So the dirt on these cement platforms is connected somehow loosely to the dirt on the ground. We'll have to explain why they went to lengths to do that. But that is one possible solution that's been suggested. But because of some opposition to that, we'll explain the opposition in a minute, there was a different solution that was suggested, again, an old solution, which is to the return of catacombs or crypts beneath the ground. They're digging underneath Har Menuchos and in other places, and building these kind of slots, or I hate to use again a crude word, cubbies, you know, in the ground where they could bury the mason. So what is the story with these solutions? How acceptable are they, and what are the issues that are involved? So we need to, of course, rewind to the basic mitzvah of Kruas HaMeis, which appears here in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara writes, Remez leKvura min haTorah minayin. Where do we find a hint to the mitzvah of Kvura? Whenever the Gemara uses a language of remez, of hint, that implies that we're not necessarily dealing with a mitzvah that's midoraisa, or at least it's going to be controversial within the Mefarshim whether we're dealing with something that's midoraisa. Whenever the Gemara uses that kind of language, there is usually a machlokes about the status of what we're talking about. So here, though, the Gemara says, Rem is a kvur min haTorah minayin. How do we know that there's a mitzvah of kvur? And the Gemara derives it from the pasuk in Parashas Kiseitse, in connection with those who are executed by Beis Din, ki kabor tikberenu b'yoy mahu. Don't leave the mace on the tree to the following day. You should bury it on that day itself. And the Gemara assumes that we can extend or apply this same mitzvah that applied to Harugei Beis Din, those who were executed by Beis Din, to the general population as well. But because the Gemara frames it in this language, remez lekvur min haTorah minayin, there is a machlokes whether or not we're dealing with a mitzvah midoraisa or a mitzvah midorabanan. And the problem is, that would have been fine. The problem is the Rambam seems to be burning both sides of the candle. The Rambam in one place seems to say Kfura is a mitzvah midoraisa, and another place he seems to say that it's midorabanan. Over here in Ois Beis of Hilchos Avil, Perek Yudad Ulocha Aleph, the Rambam outlines a few mitzvos that are all a fulfillment of a haftu reyacha kamoicha, of loving your friend like yourself. One of them is to visit the sick, levakar chaylim. The Rambam lists another items in that context, but included in the list is the hisasik b'chol tzarchei hakvura, to take care of all matters related to burial, including lachbar v'likbar, to dig and to bury. Now that, the Rambam writes, mitzvah aseishol divrehem. These manifestations, these specific actions, are only midrabana. Now it's true, it fits in the larger heading, an umbrella of ahav to the reyacha kamaicha, but these specific activities themselves are only midrabana. And the Rambam makes this point in the following words, afal pisha kol mitzvos elu midivrehem. Even though all of these things are only midrabana, it's included, it's a kiyum of ahav to the reyacha kamaicha. The Rambam mentions this not only there in Hilchos Avil, but in the Sefer HaMitzvos too. And the Rambam is explaining which items he's going to count in his list of 613 mitzvahs. He has rules about what he's going to count. The first rule, the first shayresh, is he's only going to count those mitzvahs that are midoraisa, if it's biblical in nature. If it's rabbinic in nature, the Rambam is not going to count it. Therefore, Ner Chanukah, Mikra Megillah are not counted in the Minyan HaMitzvahs. And the Rambam distinguishes his opinion from that of the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, who does count mitzvahs midrabanan. One of those mitzvahs midrabanan that the Bahag counts, with the Rambam is upset about, and which he excludes, is Kfuras Meisim. He says, look at the Bahag. The Bahag counted mitzvahs midrabanan like Ner Chanukah, like Mikra Megillah, and Kfuras Meisim. Those are only midrabanan and should not be counted. So the Rambam states in these two places, quite explicitly, that the mitzvah of Kfuras HaMeis is only midrabanan. The Ramban, in his arguments there in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, in his commentary, is quick to note that the Rambam himself, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in his count of the mitzvahs, includes burying the dead. The Rambam over here, Ois Dalet, mitzvah say Reish Lamed Aleph, writes, He should see Vanu Likvar Haruge Beis. Then there's a mitzvah based on the pasuk of Kavar Tikberenu Bayomahu to bury Haruge Beisdin, those who are executed by Beisdin, but not only them, who are Din Bishar Mason. This includes other Mason as well. So the Rambam writes explicitly that there is a mitzvah midoraisa to bury Mason, even though he already wrote that it's only midrabanan. So Ramban presents this problem. He offers one suggestion, which he's not happy about. What he suggests is perhaps there's a distinction between the relatives who have a mitzvah midoraisa to bury their relative, as opposed to the general population, where the obligation to bury the dead perhaps is only midrabanan. But the Ramban himself is aware of the problem, and that is when there are no relatives to speak of, in the absence of relatives, of course, the obligation to bury the dead devolves upon the general community. And the Rambam himself makes this point in Mitzvah Saseh Reish Lamed Aleph, that yes, of course, the obligation is primarily upon the relatives, but in the absence of relatives, the obligation is transferred to the larger community. So to draw a distinction between the immediate relatives versus the larger community is somewhat fuzzy within the Rambam to claim that that's the difference between the mitzvah midoraisa versus the obligation midorabanan. Many achrayim therefore go in a different direction. They argue the following. They suggest that perhaps to cover the mace is a mitzvah midoraisa. To bury the mace in the ground might only be an obligation midrabanan. And they have, if you look carefully at the language of the Rambam writes in the Mitzvah Saseh Reish Lamed Aleph, where he said it's deraisa, he should sivanu likbar haruge beizdin, to bury those who are executed. He doesn't mention, though, necessarily in the ground, as opposed to in Hilchos Avelos, back in Ois Beis. There the Rambam said that the obligation midrabanan is lachbar velikbar, to dig and to bury. That might imply, perhaps, that there's a difference between covering the body versus actually burying the body in the ground. Covering the body might be an obligation midoraisa, it shouldn't be exposed, versus burying the ground might only be midrabanan. The Koichemda, that's Don Polotsky in his commentary on Parashas Vayechi, argues that this would justify the concluding pasuk in this week's parsha, in last week's parsha, that when Yosef dies, the pasuk concludes, Vayisem ba'aron b'mitzrayim. They placed him in an aron in Mitzrayim. And the Siparno there writes over here, Oizavav in the Sheet of Mar Mekoymus, that he was not buried in the ground. He was buried in an aron, and that was the very same aron that Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael took with them on their way back to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't have to exhume his remains because he was buried in an aron that was above ground. How could Yosef have been buried in an aron? It was above ground. Wasn't that a violation of the mitzvah of Kfuras HaMeis? Similarly, back in Parashas Chayei Sarah, when Avraham Avinu was looking for leverage in his negotiations with Ephron, he tells him over here, Ois Hey, he says, if you don't allow me to bury my wife Sarah, so then my mace will remain before me. Right? Likbar es meisi milfonai. So the Ramban writes that what he was arguing with Ephron was, if you don't allow me to bury her in Maris HaMachpelah, I'll just leave her in an aron, and that will be fine as far as I'm concerned. I'll just leave her in an aron. How could Avraham Avinu have left Sarah in an aron? Isn't that a violation of failing to bury his mace? And perhaps you see from here that at least midoraisa, it's enough to bury the mace or to cover the mace in an aron. Midrabanan, what's required is to actually bury the mace in the ground. The Ramban clearly does not, even though that distinction might hold water within the Ramban clearly does not accept this. The Ramban writes over here, Oizayin, and this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that to leave a mace covered in an aron is not enough. Nimsenu l'meidim sha'oisa aron l'mace. If you leave a mace in an aron, even though it is in a cemetery, if it's not buried in the ground, person has not fulfilled the mitzvah of kuras hamace properly. What about Yosef? What about Sarah? So perhaps we could argue that, as the Klei Chemda does, that perhaps it might have to do with the fact that they were tzaddikim, unusual tzaddikim, and therefore didn't require kvura in the ground. Look back at Ois Aleph. The Gemara brings two reasons for kvuras hames. One is mishum bizyona, because of it's humiliating kind of to leave the mace exposed, not necessarily for the mace himself, but for the rest of kavod abrius, for the rest of human dignity. Also because of a kapara, there was an atonement that was achieved by being buried in the ground. Maybe because of the embarrassment of being lowered into the ground. The person rules over the world while he's alive, and then now he's lowered into the ground entirely powerless. So maybe that kind of embarrassment achieves a certain measure of kapara. So the Gemara brings two reasons for kfuras hameis. Is it because of bizayon, kind of a kavod abrios issue, human dignity issue, or is it because of to achieve a certain kapara? So it could be that the person is covered in an aron, you have avoided the kavod abrios issue. The body is not exposed. You will have failed to have achieved the kapara aspect of kuras hameis. So it could be that Sarah and Yosef didn't require that same kapara, being unusual tzaddikim as they were, that it was sufficient for them to be buried or to be covered in an aron, as opposed to being buried in the ground. But of course, all other mesim, even to fulfill the mitzvah of Kfura Deiraisa, might be required to be buried in the ground. The Rambam might have argued, as we mentioned, that that's not necessary. Maybe that's only midrabanan, but the Ramban here argues that that is necessary even midrabanan. It's not sufficient to be covered in an aron. Person has to be buried in the ground. The Ramban goes further, as does the Ran over here in Oisves, that it's not enough to be buried in the ground in an aron, even though that is sufficient. He writes over here on the second line, Vim asa aron v'kavur b'karka eino over olav. For the mitzvah midrabanan of kvura b'karka, that is good enough. Not again, an aron is not good enough, but if you take the aron and bury the aron in the ground, that would be good enough. Okay, so if the aron, even though the person is, there is that kind of a barrier between the person, between the mace and the ground, in the fact that he's surrounded by an aron, you have fulfilled the mitzvah of kfuras hameis, as long as the aron is placed in the ground, not an above ground aron. But the Rambam continues, it's best to be buried in the ground without a separation, without a barrier between the mace and the surrounding earth. And the Ran explains that this is based on the pasuk in Parashas Bereishis, that after the chet of the Eitz Hadas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam HaRishon, "B'zeis HaPechot Teichol Lechem Ad Shuvcha El HaOfar," until you return to the dust, "Ki Min HaOfar Atavi El HaOfar Tashuv." If you came from the dirt, from the dust, you should return to the dirt and to the dust. And the way that is achieved in its purest form is if there is no aron in between the mace and the ground. So the person has fulfilled the mitzvah of kfuras hameis, according to the Ramban and the Ran, midoraisa, if he's buried, the aron is buried in the ground, even though there is an aron, but better would be to be buried into the ground without an aron, so that the mace could return directly to the yafar. The Shach, over here, Oistes, quotes in the name of the Levush and the Prisha, who asks, well, why don't we have the custom to do this? They already had the custom to bury in an aron, why don't we bury directly in the ground without a coffin? Of course, here in the United States, there are laws about these kinds of things. You're not allowed to do that, I don't believe. So, but they don't bring up the Dina de Malchusa aspect of it. But the Shach does justify the practice because he says, anyway, we place certain earthenware pieces on top of the mace. The rest of it is Manenu Shanois Nimcharsis Alpiv Be'enov. They're accustomed to use the different earthenware pieces within the Aron, and there are different Chevra Kaddishas that continue this practice to today. That's considered to be dirt or dust, and that is a fulfillment of Kimin HaOfar Atav Yela Ofar Toshuv. Additionally, he says, there, of course, are going to be holes in the Aron, and if there are holes in the Aron that connect to the dust or the dirt around, that is sufficient to be considered to satisfy the Ramban and the Ran's preference to be buried directly in the dirt. Right? Even though there is an aron, as long as the aron is in the ground and fulfill the mitzvah of kvura d'oraisa, but there is a preference to be buried directly in the dirt. If there are cracks, there are holes in the aron, So then that's considered to be buried directly in the dirt. This is based on a Yerushalmi in Masechtas Kelayim, where the Yerushalmi says, "V'tehei Aroni Nekuva Ba'aretz." Rabbi Chizkiah asked before he passed away, you know, gave a few instructions to his relatives. One of them was, please make holes in my Aron, the assumption being that through those holes, he could achieve Kfura directly in the ground. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, many follow this practice to today. We bury in Aronis, but we do have, some have, you know, actually drill holes in the bottom. Some assume no Aron is completely sealed, and therefore there must be inevitable cracks in the Aron, which will open it up to the surrounding dirt. Some use these earthenware pieces that are in the Aron. But of course, in Eretz Yisrael, the custom of the Chevra Kadisha is to not rely on any of these quote-unquote leniencies, and they follow the instructions of the Ramban and the Ran more literally, and they bury the mace not in an Aron, but directly in the ground. And of course, if one is transferring mace into Eretz Yisrael, that is the minig that will be followed. It's interesting, Rav Moshe and the Igros Moshe notes that the Rambam in Hilchos Avel doesn't have any preference for being buried directly in the ground. The Ran, right, and the Ramban said that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Turas Hamais by taking the Aron and putting the Aron in the ground. An Aron outside of the ground, you won't fulfill the mitzvah of Turas Hamais, but if you take the Aron and put it in the ground, you fulfill Turas Hamais. Best would be, though, to bury the mace directly in the ground without a separation of the Aron. The Ramban makes no such stipulation, makes no such claim that it's best to be buried directly in the earth. The Rambam actually quotes the minhag to be buried in Aronis, but he does stipulate that it be an Aron shel Eitz. So over here, Yisud Aleph, the Rambam in Hilchos Avot, Perek Daled, Halacha Daled, writes, V'yeshel and likvar ba'aron shel Eitz, and he makes no claim that it's best to be buried directly in the ground. The Rambam's condition that it be an Aron shel Eitz, an Aron of wood, is based on the Medrash in Parshas Bereishis that after the sin of the Eitz Hadas, the pasuk says, "Ve'ischabe ha'adam ve'ishto b'seich Eitz Hagan." Adam and Chava hid amongst the trees in Gan Eden, and the Medrash continues, "Remez l'toldos of shu nitnin by Reino Shoeitz." This is a allusion to the descendants of Adam and Chava who would be buried in a Reino's made out of wood. Perhaps because we could speculate. Perhaps that's because wood will disintegrate faster and become like Afar, and therefore maybe the Rambam also has the preference of being buried directly in the ground, but he feels that Aronos of Eitz are the equivalent of being buried in the Afar because they will disintegrate quickly. Be that as it may, the Rambam does not make a stipulation that it's best to be buried directly in the ground, which of course also might justify the practice here in Chutz Laaretz where we bury in Aronos Shel Eitz. That's the routine, that's the custom. That might be based perhaps on the opinion of the Rambam that there isn't a preference even to be buried directly in the ground, even though the Shulchan Aruch does quote the Ramban in the Ran that it is preferable to be buried in the ground, and therefore many do poke holes in the Aron or assume that there are cracks in the Aron or put some sort of earthenware pieces in the Aron. Okay, so we have, you know, the mitzvah of Krura is more or less not only to cover the mace, that's achieved through the Aron. That might be sufficient midoraisa for the Rambam, but certainly not midorabanan. And according to other Rishonim, it's not even sufficient midoraisa. A person has to take the Aron and actually bury it in the ground. For the Rambam, again, that's midorabanan. For other Rishonim, perhaps that's midoraisa, bury the Aron in the ground. It's best to be buried, perhaps, even without any kind of Aron. The custom is to use Aron shalates, as the Rambam mentioned, but perhaps best to be buried without any kind of separation at all, directly in the ground. Each mace has to be buried directly in the ground and is entitled to a certain personal space when they're in the ground. The tour over here, Shin Samach Beis and Shin Samach Gimel, quotes in the name of the Avel Rabosi that each mace is entitled to 3 tfachim on all 6 sides, above, below, and on all 4 sides around. And therefore, you can't bury 2 maces next to each other or one above each other unless there's a separation of 6 tfachim between the 2 mason. V'davka shem b'neim offer shisha tfachim, and yesh b'neim offer shisha tfachim, then it is permitted. This is borne out as well, that's the Braisa and the Abba Rabasi and the Masechtas Ketanas, Masechtas Malchus. This is borne out as well by the Mishnah Masechtas Baba Basa, which is talking about a person who bought a certain area as a burial grounds. And you know, he stipulated with the person in the transaction that he wanted to buy this burial grounds for a certain number of mesim. How much space is he entitled to when he purchased this area as a burial grounds? You know, stipulating how many slots he would need. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Baba Basra that if he buys a cave that is 4 amos by 6 amos, then he can bury. I gave you the diagram over here on the page of diagrams. Then in the part that, you know, on the side that's six, let's say it's 6 long by 4 wide, and the part that's 6 amos long, he can bury 3 mesim, which implies, well, you know, just by mathematics, that he can get 3 slots for kvarim, because in between each one, you'll need an amma, 6 tfachim being the equivalent of 1 amma. So you have an amma for the kever, for the, you know, where the mace will be placed, an amma in between, another amma for the kever, an amma in between, and then another kever, as you see on the page of diagrams. But what's, you know, if you just do the mathematics, what emerges is between each kever, you need a minimum of an amma, or the equivalent of 6 tfachim. The same is true not only, now that Gemara Baba Basra is one mace next to the other, over here in the tour, quotes in the name of the Bryson of Rabasi, that is not only true in between, if you're burying horizontally, but vertically too. If you want to bury one mace on top of the other, you would also need a separation of 6 tfachim, or 1 amma, which is about, you know, a foot and a half to 2 feet, somewhere in that range between the two mason. It's interesting that the Tur here quotes in the name of Rav Haigoin. Already in the times of Rav Haigoin, in the period of the Goinim, hundreds of years ago, they had this situation of limited space to bury mason. So Nisha Rabbeinu Haigoin, Ma'orash Yesh Behen Kuchim, Shemachnisasar mason. They had, you know, caves where they put in the mason. But they were running out of space. So they wanted to know, could they exhume the remains, put them in a kind of collective pit, and then reuse the caves for new mason? So Rabbeinu Haigoin says, no, that's not acceptable at all. Better to bury the mason far away, you know, if that's your only option. But he says, of course, if you have no option of burying them further away, and your only option is the space that's in front of you, and that's limited in nature, he says, you can't leave the mace outside on the street, of course, but you should bury it, you know, as best you can, and trying to get, you know, 6 tfachim between the different maces. He says, well, in base hakfar shen ismalei vada igak kaduk achrisa. If there's no other place, afilu shiarachuk misham, even if it's far away, that would be preferable, of course. Ma yasu, what can you do if there's nowhere else? Literally, ef shalei lemishvake lemeis below kever. You can't leave the person exposed. If there's another place, if there's another place, even though it's far away, go there. And don't do nivul hames. But if you know, if you can, you should have 6 tfachim in between each one of the mesim. So what Rabbeinu Haigoin here implies is that if you really have no other option, you can't leave the mace outside. You can bury him in the Beis HaKfaris, even though there isn't 6 tfachim between the mesim. But ideal, of course, is to have 6 tfachim. Between them. So over here, the Shach quotes this halacha, quotes from Rav Haigoin. Over here, Ois Tezayin, Shulchan Aruch says, "Ein kovrim beis mesim zeh b'tzad zeh." You can't bury 2 mesim, one next to the other. Ela im kein ha'idofim mafsik b'neim, unless there's a sufficient space between them. And not only that, you can't bury them one on top of the other. But if there is 6 tfachim between them, and the assumption is that that's true both horizontally and vertically, and yesh b'neim offer shisha tfachim, that would be permitted. But the Shach there writes over here on the second line, if there's literally no other option, then what else are you going to do? You can't leave the mace exposed. If we have nothing else to do, we have to compromise on this 6 tfachim break. The Pischei Tshuva there, in the third line in the brackets, quotes in the name of the Tshuva, the Shavus Yaakov, that this was sometimes necessary. Because, of course, the Jews lived in confined spaces. They were given places where they could bury their mason, and they didn't have permission to bury them in other areas. They weren't permitted to open other cemeteries. So they had no choice but to use the existing cemeteries. And if there was, you know, no more space, they would have to compromise on some of these regulations. So he says, near Ali, then it's Pashit Haminig, you know, that a burying mason with less than 6 tfachim of dirt between them, we're not in charge of allotting the land. Every time we have to fight for every inch. All these halachas of separating between the mesim, only apply when we have the ability to realign the community or to acquire new space. But we don't have that option. We're gonna, unfortunately, the Shvus Yaakov felt that they would have to compromise on some of these distances between the Mason. The Bach, just to put him into context, lived in Krakow in the 1500s and 1600s, observed that in the Beis HaKfaris in Krakow, they did compromise on the distance between the Mason, and he's not happy about it. He doesn't feel that even in extenuating circumstances, these are things that can be compromised, that can be overlooked. He says, "V'kan kihilas kodesh Krakow, the kvaras to berechayv hayehudim, all the burial spaces are in the Jewish quarter. The efshuon also chutz berechayv mei asakana, we can't bring them outside. And the Beis HaKfaris has become full. Asher hitzruchu lishbach afar akvar. What have they done? What they did was they took dirt, put it on top of the existing mason, and you know, six tefachim of dirt, and then buried mason on top of that." So instead of compromising on the space between the mason, they added new dirt, which always seems to be a possibility. Of course, you might need steps then to get into the Beis HaKfaris, you know, in some of these communities, because the more dirt you keep adding, all of a sudden the Beis HaKfaris is going to become elevated, become a mountain. But the Bach claims that that would be better than compromising on the space that's between the mason. Just keep adding dirt and then adding mason on top of that. And he wants to protest against the places in Krakow and other cities in Europe where they compromise on the space between the mason. He doesn't feel that is acceptable. And in fact, the solution of the Bach was followed in many European cities. I think in the old cemetery in Prague, you will find many layers of mason, one on top of the other, with, I don't know how much dirt is between them. Ideally, it should have been six tefachim, about a foot and a half to 2 feet. I presume sometimes it was less, but it should have been, you know, six tefachim. And that's why the cemetery in Prague, I think, is a little higher than the surrounding streets, because they kept having to bury mason one on top of the other, and they had to, you know, put more dirt on top. What's interesting to think about, and we'll get to this in a moment in our concluding, you know, Lamaisa statement, but what seems to be fascinating over here, and this observation is made by the former chief rabbi, Rabbi Amar, in an article in Truman about this issue, that it doesn't sound like they asked permission, right, from the families who were buried there already. Do you mind if we pile dirt on top of you, your relative, and bury on top of them? So even though they purchased probably that part or that plot in the cemetery, it seems to be that the assumption was that they're entitled to be buried there, but they don't necessarily own the real estate and the air rights on top, you know, so below or on top. They own, you know, where they were buried, but they don't necessarily own the rights to prevent other people from burying on top of them, or perhaps the same argument, but burying below them. Now, it could be, of course, we had no other choice, so what else are we going to do? But it doesn't seem like the geneva or the gzela, the theft issue, was ever brought up in those discussions of adding dirt and then burying, you know, new mason, which is something that we should think about in our context. One last, you know, issue in terms of separation between the mason is Rabbi Akiva Eger over here, in the brackets, quotes the name of the Tashbetz, who had a different version of that brisa that the Torah quoted. The Torah quoted a brisa that you need six tefachim between the mason, you know, vertically. The one version of the Avar Abasi is that it's enough with three tefachim in between. Now, it could be that what that means is each mace is entitled to a personal space of three tefachim, and therefore to separate between two mason in order to provide each one with their personal space, you need a total of six tefachim. That is possible. Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes the name of the Tashbetz that insisted, no, three tefachim is enough, and therefore there were certain communities, right, that compromised, if not entirely on the difference between the mason, they compromised on the distance. Instead of six tefachim, they relied upon the perhaps more lenient opinion that it's enough with three tefachim. So can this, you know, that was traditionally what was done when they ran out of space, was to put dirt on top and then bury new mason, you know, on top of that, ideally with a separation of six tefachim. Some relied on three tefachim. What about building this kind of building, not out of dirt piled one mason on top of the other, but out of cement and kind of creating a cement structure that has the multi-layers as we brought up at the beginning? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin actually talks about a kever binyan, as does the Gemara in Masechtas Moed Katan, a building which was of graves. Rashi on that Gemara in Sanhedrin writes that it was built above ground. Shabano l'mala min hakarka. It was built above ground, which might already be a precedent to building a building and, you know, burying mason in the building, assuming that it's attached to the ground and built out of earthen kind of materials. However, the Yad Ramah on that Gemara in Sanhedrin disagrees, or perhaps explains better than Rashi, probably what Rashi meant too, is that it's not that the mason were buried in the building above ground. The mace was buried in the ground as a tziyun, to mark the grave, as they do by many tzaddikim today, where there's an oil. The mace is not buried in the oil. It's not buried in that building on top. The mace is buried below, and on top there's a place, you know, which is to protect those who are coming to visit their relative. But it's not that the mace was actually buried in the building. It was buried in the ground below. And that's probably what Rashi means too, is that he was buried, the Ramban writes the same in the Torah Sa'adam. These kever binyan, it's not that they were buried in the building. They were buried in the ground, and the building was built on top. That's probably what Rashi means too, because if you look back at Ois Aleph, the first source, which talks about the mitzvah kvura, Rashi writes that the kapara aspect of kvura is achieved when you lower the mace into the ground. That kind of demonstration of powerlessness, of submission, is what achieves the kapara. As Rashi writes, Shemoridin umashpilin oso betachtios. He's brought down into the lower levels. The Ran makes the same point over here in Ois Ches, an eighth source. He says in the last few lines, that itself is humiliating and creates the atonement. Presumably, they were all dealing with situations where the mace was buried in the ground. What we're dealing here with is a building that was built on top of it. What about actually burying mace, though, in a building? Is that, you know, if it's not what the Gemara is probably talking about, but can that be allowed? So this was an issue that was addressed by Rav Moshe in his Tshuva about mausoleums. Rav Moshe writes that, that even though, and these are two adjacent shuvas, in many cemeteries, they use cement blocks in the grave in order to prevent, to preserve the integrity of the grave. You know, there might be water around, or there might be loose soil. It's not a very rocky soil. So the many cemeteries today in Chutz La'aretz use cement blocks in the grave. Rav Moshe was asked about this. Rav Moshe claims that it's not a problem at all. Cement itself is made out of sand and dirt and stuff. So that itself is considered to be a karka, and it doesn't create a separation between the mace and the ground around it. It itself is considered to be karka. However, Moshe, in the very next shuva, after approving, not opposing the cement blocks in the graves, Moshe is opposed to mausoleums that are built above ground, even though they're built entirely out of cement, which would seem to be a continuation of the ground. And here Moshe has a few reasons for being opposed to it. The first, which this actually Ramosha doesn't bring up, but it's just obvious based on what we already said, is that the kapara aspect of being buried in the ground comes from being lowered into the ground. If a person is buried above ground in a building, you would lose that aspect of kapara. But that's not even Ramosha's main argument. His other argument is that the mace is supposed to be placed in a location where it's not accessible anymore. As the Ran writes over here in Ois Ches, he says, "She'ein lecha geniza gedola mimena." There's no other, greater. It should be set aside. It should be separated and left alone, undisturbed. Moshe claims over here the whole purpose of burying above ground is that it's still accessible. The body doesn't decay to the same degree. But I believe Moshe's main opposition was that this was an attempt to replicate mausoleums that were present by other religions and other societies in order to, as a kind of sign of nobility and of superiority, more than the other mason that are around. The Rav Moshe was offended by that. And therefore he writes, it's not a Jewish thing to be buried in a mausoleum. And therefore Rav Moshe doesn't approve of it. He's quite opposed to it. He doesn't go so far to say that it's not kfura bakarka, but he doesn't. He's certainly not approving of it, and is opposed to burial in mausoleums. I think just as an additional, just an understanding why one might be opposed to mausoleums, and then we'll get to the layered cement structures, is that because Rav Moshe quotes a Yerushalmi, I have it over here in the Marmot Premise, over here, Ois Yud Gimel, where the Yerushalmi writes that if you're transferring a mace, let's say you exhume the body and move it to a different, you reinter it in a different cemetery, so there are certain laws of Avelos that apply on that day that you reinter the body. Usually Avelos is right in the immediate aftermath of someone passing away, but when you reinter a body, there are certain laws of Avelos that apply on that day that the mace that the niftar is transferred. However, the Yerushalmi says if a person is placed in an aron of mateches, in a metal aron or in a stone aron, so then the laws of mourning don't apply because it's still considered to be buried while you're transferring the mace. the Yerushalmi says Ba'aron shel Eben of a Ba'aron shel Eitz Yesh Mishum Dikur Asamas, and the Karban Eda explains there when the mace is in an Aron of Eben, that itself is considered to be in the ground. That's like, you know, you're still in the ground because metal is extracted from the ground. It's part of the ground itself. It's mined. We, of course, don't bury in Aronos of Matechas. We only bury in Aronos of Eitz based on that medrash that we mentioned. Vayischabe ha'adam ve'isha b'seich Eitz Hagan. They hid in the forest of Gan Eden. We bury in Aronos of Eitz. Why don't we bury in Aronos of Matechas? It should have been better than being buried in the ground. It is the ground itself. So many explain that it's because the purpose of being buried in the ground is not to be buried in the ground per se, it's to fulfill min ha'ofer atavi el ha'ofer tashuv. The purpose of being buried in the ground is to return to the dust from whence Adam HaRishon came. So there's a difference between karka, ground, as opposed to dirt. A person is supposed to be buried in the dirt, not necessarily in the ground. And while cement structures are certainly the ground, it's not necessarily the same as dirt. So that's another reason, perhaps, to be opposed to mausoleum. So in order to kind of achieve all of these objectives, those who built satisfy the different opinions. Those who built these multi-layered above ground structures felt that best would be to put dirt at least on the cement, and therefore you fulfill kimina offer to be able to offer tashuv, and it's attached somewhat to the ground below because in the cement columns there is dirt that connects to the dirt, you know, in the ground below, and that's somehow a fulfillment of being buried in the dirt, although you do lose out on the being lowered into the ground, you know, aspect of kapara, which is achieved by that humiliating experience of being lowered into the ground, which serves as an atonement. So you will lose out on the kapara aspect of it, but, you know, at least the upper aspect they're trying to preserve. You would have thought, though, so that's why above ground, many poskim were opposed to it, because you lose out on the kapara. And of course, it's a change in the minhag, and it's just, you know, I'd say it's equally as hard, just like it's impossible to get a mohel to change their minhagim. Based on whatever arguments you might make, you know, it's preferable halachically to do something one way or another. A mohel does not change. You know, those things don't change. Chever kaddishas are impossible to change them and hug him. So over here, there's always going to be opposition to anything new. You would have thought, though, being buried in these kind of things that are carved out in the mountain, these kinds of cubbies in the mountain, would have been the best solution. That seems to be, you know, what was done in times of Gemara with these kinds of slots in the mountain. However, here too, some have raised, I would have thought that would have been the best. If you look at the way that it's constructed, though, it's not really carved into the mountain. There's cement cubbies attached to the wall of the mountain. So, and you don't go down to get there. You drive right in because the mountain is above ground. The roads are on the ground level below, and you kind of just drive right into these tunnels. So no one's going down. You don't have that kind of kapara that's achieved by, you know, being lowered into the ground. And over here, it's kind of in a cement cubby that's not really in the ground itself, it's in cement. So again, you have that opposition to not being buried in the dirt, you're being buried in ground, right? Cement is karka. Anyone who's opposed to mausoleums, no one ever said that it wasn't burial. It probably is burial, midrash raisa and midrash rabbanan, but you lose out on the aspect of being buried in dirt, kimina afar atavi or afar toshuv. Same reason we don't bury in metal caskets, you know, probably is kavura d'oraisa because it is from the ground itself. You're not being buried in the dirt. So to achieve that, they put dirt in these cement cubbies, but it's not being buried in the dirt in the same way. And you're not necessarily lowered into the ground in the same way that a person is lowered into a kever, which achieves a certain, you know, extra level of kapara. So I think that's why you have different opinions within contemporary poskim about the acceptability of both of these burial methods in the levels above and even in the kuchim, in the, you know, kind of the caves, catacombs. Below. I think what will emerge, and I don't think this is a settled issue, it's still something that's being debated by Gedolei HaPoskim, and here we need communal voices to kind of, you know, state opinions, because these are issues that affect the community. One person can't necessarily have a psak from their rav. One rav can take a side on an issue, but it's something that the community has to kind of figure out, and I believe that this probably has something a lot to do with how big of a crisis you think exists. If you think there isn't as much of an issue to be buried in, you know, further places out than Eretz Israel, so then, you know, this won't necessarily appeal to you. If you feel that it's more important to be buried in Yerushalayim, you know, that this you know, might appeal to you. If you don't mind kicking the can for another 10 years, then again, this issue might not appeal to you in the same way as someone who has got a more long-term perspective and is trying to figure things out, not for the next 10 years, but 20 and 30 and 40 years. So it's something that's coming up. It's something that's discussed. If a person is buying burial plots in Eretz Yisrael, certainly they're aware of the issue. And these are some of the studim that are being debated. Okay.